T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
The McNeil and Parkin Show, afternoons on The Score.
In San Diego, it is a Mets miracle for Marshall. For the first time, the Thundering Herd win a game in the NCAA tournament. A 13 seed, 81-75 over Wichita State.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
TNT with the audio. 4 seed Wichita State falls to Marshall today. It's McNeil and Parkins live at Real Time Sports in Elk Grove Village. Brought to you by this segment, CC's. New crust, new sauce, New York style pizza. Now at CC's, grab an extra large slice of their new meatball pepperoni pizza and new cheesecake brownies for dessert. There's so much to love on the buffet for just $5 and change. Only at CC's. Prices vary. Restrictions apply. You're right, Mac. The Rocky Top lyrics.
Oh, they're special.
Ain't no telephone bills?
No, yes, right. There's nothing municipal, as one of our texters shared, who's a Chicagoan, but a very proud UT alum. He calls it perfect. I think he said it was perfect white trash revelry. That's exactly what it is. Once two strangers climbed on Rocky Top looking for a moonshine still. Isn't that how it starts?
Yeah, well, yeah, you know the lyrics.
I do know the lyrics, right? Or I wouldn't be talking about it.
I have to read the lyrics. Once I had a girl on Rocky Top, half bear, other half cat.
Wild as a mink, but sweet as soda pop. I still dream about that.
Yeah, look at you. It's very impressive, you hillbilly you. Man, wild as a mink. That's the second time that's been referenced today, because a listener came up to Mac here at Real Time Sports in Elk Grove Village. He was like, oh, my God, Dan McNeil, so happy to have you back. You're a legend, blah, blah, blah. Can I take a selfie with you? Mac takes a selfie. It was all good. I'm proud of you for knowing what a selfie is. And then you say, no, this kid right here, Danny Parkins, he's going to be a star. And I'm like, oh, you're being way too kind. And the guy goes, oh, yeah. He'll be a star like Chet Kopick. And I was like, oh, I'm going to be, what do you say? I was going to be walking around in a mink coat one day?
A full-length fur coat.
A full-length fur coat.
Someday you'll be, and I have to stop using the word gonna. You already are a star.
Oh, thank you,
you
sir.
Are.
Oh, no, you're too kind. I mean, we have to survive this show together for me to like really reach star status. I've reached the Rocky Top of the Score right now. But I don't know, a full-length fur coat I feel like has gone out of style a little bit. If and when I get to star power,
yeah.
I'll get a chain.
I try not to use too many animal products for, you know, human arrogance personified. Which
really?
Is right.
Good for
you know, many clothing items are made from I probably would never buy a full length coat.
No, me neither.
I don't want to do that. I don't need to.
Yeah. How did Chet look good in his coats back in the day?
Let me tell you. No, yeah, it looked good on him.
It did.
You can pull it off if you're 6'5". Chet's a very tall man. He's vertical. I'm not. I would look silly in it. And I did look silly the one time I considered purchasing one.
You considered purchasing one?
Yes.
Did you take a picture trying it on in the dressing room? What happened?
John Chico's Menswear in Maryville was a big sponsor of the Mac Yurko and Harry Show. And we all had clothing deals there. And right after the White Sox won the World Series in October of 05, I tried on this white and silver and black mink coat that just, it was so White Soxy. And it felt so comfortable on me, but I just didn't pull the trigger on it.
Man.
I have photos of me in it somewhere.
You do?
Yes, I do.
At what stage of this was it? Chris Farley stage? Like, what was your weight-wise then?
No, I was okay weight-wise.
Okay.
I mean, I wasn't okay, but I wasn't. No, I wasn't the numeral zero.
I'm just curious what Davinell are going to get in that picture.
I want to see this picture, and this is, man, it's a different era of radio money. Like, are you kidding? The White Sox win. I'm going to go buy a full-length fur coat.
Well, Fred Chico, the proprietor, was very... We all had a clothing allowance.
Oh, wow.
And I'm not much of a clothes horse. I did go through a clothing period at that time. It just, you know, freshly married.
If it's free.
To an attorney. was used to looking at men in nice Brooks Brothers suits.
Sure.
So I bought a few nice suits.
So you had to dress the part.
Yeah, I did for a little while, yeah. But I'm generally not, no.
Yeah.
Generally not.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is one of the first times I've worn a collar to work. You know, we're still new in the show. I didn't know if any of the bosses were going to be coming out here. I'm much more of a T-shirt and jeans guy myself.
Because there is a rule on wearing collars at remotes. You can tell how much respect I have for the rule.
Yeah, you're already breaking the rule. I thought it was score apparel or collared shirts, and you're 0 for 2.
I'll put the collar on. If an executive walks in, I'll put my fleece back on, and I will be freshly collared.
By the end of the hour, you will hear Porter Moser and Dante Ingram, who hit the shot last night for Loyola. The hero of the game was on with Lawrence Holmes, and the coach was on with Mully and Hanley. So we'll do that before we have Teddy Greenstein coming up at 4 o'clock. He's got a Yu Darvish profile, and also we will talk about Tiger Woods and the state of his return to competitive professional golf with him at 4. But you said, as Big Chief MacHawk, that you have advice for Hawks fans that you would like
yes,
to disseminate.
I tweeted last night when the Winnipeg Jets scored their fifth goal. If they get the sixth, I am going to turn off the television and curl up with Mark Lazarus's book, If These Walls Could Talk. And I would encourage every Blackhawks fan this upcoming offseason, if you haven't read Mark's book already, that you pick it up. It's published locally by Triumph. It's an easy read. It is one of the best pieces of sports writing locally that I've enjoyed in a long, long time. It is
really?
A comprehensive look at all three cup runs. Mark was not on the beat for the Sun-Times in 2010 when they beat the Flyers on that glorious June night, that Wednesday night in Philly at the then Wachovia Center. And I think he worked even harder because he wasn't on the beat talking to more people about that first cup. And you know the cliche, you never forget your first. Many Hawks fans will regard that championship as the most meaningful of the three. I have a difficult time picking which of the three was my favorite. And I started to do so after spending so much time with his book. It is vividly written. It is colorful. It is a terrific behind-the-scenes look at how the Blackhawks organization did a complete 180, a total facelift in franchise philosophy, in terms of their popularity. He takes you through the last steps of the Dark Ages up until the time when John McDonough and Rocky Wirtz took over, not in that order, and made them a dynasty, brought us to a golden era, the golden age of Blackhawks hockey that is now coming to a close.
Do you have a, you know, to me, books like that are certainly worthwhile. Like, if you're a diehard Hawks fan, you'll read that book and you'll enjoy it. But if you're the casual Hawks fan, the thing that'll bring you in there are anecdotes, like behind-the-scenes stuff. Can you give me a for instance, like to sell the book? I'm like, something that you learned there that you would have never seen in a Mark Lazarus column or game story or something like that.
When Jonathan Toews was a younger player. Remember when Jonathan Toews was a younger player and an effective player?
I do remember that.
Both ends of the ice.
The captain.
His teammates were constantly playing jokes on him to get him to loosen up because he was a very uptight kid. They would get inside his hotel room before he gets inside of it and trash it. They would do little things, just silly guy things, things that guys do when they're being guys. 20, 25, 30-year-old professional athletes messing with the head of a teammate over and over and over again. All kinds of cool stuff like that.
All right, good stuff. So you would recommend during the Stanley Cup playoffs?
It'll warm your heart. If your Blackhawks heart needs cockles warming, Mark Lazarus's book will provide it for you. It's a terrific read.
So do you think the window is officially closed? Like, if I were to say to you, set the line on Patrick Kane winning a cup, another cup, with the Blackhawks. Is that a 3-1 long shot the rest of his career? Is that a 10-1 long shot the rest of his career?
Probably the latter, I would think, just because it's so hard to win a cup. They could be in a position to win a cup with Kane before he hangs it up if he continues to play his hockey in Chicago. But
so you think it's over?
Yes. I think it is over with this group. And I don't agree with the notion that one of them has to go. One, when I say that, I mean either the general manager, Stan Bowman, or Joel Quenneville, the veteran head coach, number two coach in career wins, behind only his boss, one of his bosses, Scotty Bowman. That's a big discrepancy, too, by the way, between one and two. Some people think Joel will get there. I don't. Even if he continues to coach elsewhere, I think he's still about 400 wins behind Scotty Bowman.
That'll take a while.
Yeah, that will, especially with this outfit right now. because it may get worse. The Hawks may get worse before they get better.
Well, they got to let the contracts play out if they can't trade them, right? I mean, that's why, is that this team is looking old and slow. And if they all the old and slow guys have no movement clauses, they're going to just get older and slower. That's kind of how time works, right?
We didn't know those no movement clauses would mean they can't move.
Right,
Brent,
actually.
Brent Seabrook struggles to move.
Yeah.
He's a very space-efficient player. He's still a very smart player, but his best days are long behind him. And the same could be said for perhaps my favorite Blackhawk, maybe my favorite Chicago athlete of all time, Duncan Keith. He's not the same player he was. He's going to be 34 soon. You know what? He looks 34. The volume of hockey these cats have played over the last 10 years is just absurd. Way too many flight miles on these guys. You look at Olympic play, going deep into the playoffs, 3 years getting to the Cup final, that year when the season was truncated to 48 games. Shep and I were talking about this earlier today regarding Lazarus's book. He takes you through all three of those championships, and the one that I think was the most fun. Now, the 09 and 10 season was great. So many wonderful. Hose's debut in San Jose the night before Thanksgiving when the Hawks blew out the Sharks 7-2. He had 2 or 3 points in his first game. Just so many wonderful memories. But that 13 team that played 48 games over 99 nights, every night almost, we were getting hockey 3-4 nights a week. And every game mattered because they were jockeying for playoff position as soon as the puck dropped in January. They won to it. They didn't lose in their first 24 straight games.
It's the bill come and do, right? What's happening right now? Like, that's what it is. You got your three cups. Those guys got rewarded with contracts.
Yes.
They deserved it. Now, you can say that they should not have given some of the no-movement clauses, and that the Seabrook deal, he got too much money and too much length, and he got the no-movement clause. Like, he got everything. Like, that was a deal that a lot of people didn't think made sense at the time. But for the most part,
right.
This is the bill coming due for rewarding star players from a dynastic Hawks team that revitalized hockey in this city and gave you a new generation of Blackhawks fans.
It's exactly that, Danny. And it's also the absence, and no one has talked about this lately. At least I haven't heard anybody discussing this, maybe because fewer people are discussing hockey right now.
Yeah.
We all knew when we learned the news of Marian Hossa's skin disorder last offseason that we would miss him. It occurred to me opening day, man, we're going to really notice very, very soon what he meant to this team. And it didn't happen immediately because the Hawks got the benefit of a schedule that was favorable, catching teams on back-to-backs both in their first and second games of the year. They opened up against the Penguins, and they blitzed them because the previous evening the Penguins were raising banners to the ceiling in their building. So they were kind of spent. But the absence of Hossa was just enormous this year. The things he does, not necessarily, you know, being a huge point producer, but his defensive play, things he does away from the puck, it was a huge absence. There was a huge void without Marian Hossa on the Hawks roster this year.
The updated scores for the NCAA tournament, only two games going on right now. North Carolina on top of Lipscomb, 53-42, out of the under 16 timeout of the second half. And at halftime, the 10th-seeded Butler Bulldogs lead Arkansas 36-31. We'll have a couple of more games tipping off soon. I believe the next one is just in a couple of minutes. Murray State and West Virginia, and then Texas and Nevada. So we'll have four games going on again here at Real Time Sports in Elk Grove Village. We'll bring you the stars of the Loyola Ramblers who have been on the station. We'll bring you the best of it coming up. It's McNeil and Parkins on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
All right, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
The Ramblers, one of the stories of the NCAA tournament so far, with their upset victory and buzzer beater shot over Miami yesterday. Dante Ingram, local kid, Chicago kid, the hero, hitting the shot. And then Porter Moser, unbelievably, he's just fun. Like, every interview he does, he's super likable. You could see him at a bigger program, but you could also see him selling Loyola and the culture that he's built there for the next 20 years. He talks with great pride about the Rambler program. And the hero of the game was on with Lawrence Holmes last night, and the coach was on with Mully and Hanley this morning after the shot, and we wanted to highlight some of the best of what is the best local sports story heading into the weekend. It starts with Lawrence Holmes.
Dante Ingram of the Loyola Ramblers joining me now. Dante, when we talked last week, we didn't talk about the dream scenario of you hitting the game winner. How does that feel?
It was great. man. You know, last week you talked about being in this position to, you know, play a game in this atmosphere, you know, obviously to be able to, you know, be with this team and, you know, to hit a shot like that, you know what I'm saying? It's another dream come true.
I felt like once the ball got into your hands, you weren't going to give it up, that you were either going to win or lose on you. Walk me through what was happening after you guys get the rebound.
So initially, if our big man would have got the rebound, we would have caught timeout. But since the guard got it, you know, coach was just like, go. So, you know, Marcus, he attacked. He did a great job, you know, drawing some attention. And, you know, once I seen, you know, an inch of space, you know, I knew in my head, you know, it's going up with confidence. And I was lucky to hit the shot.
So once you hit the shot, how does that feel? There's so many of us that have played that moment out in our driveways or on the court as a little kid. I'm sure you've probably done it millions of times, but to actually do it in a game of that magnitude, what does it feel like?
It's crazy, you know, to do it in that atmosphere, you know, and for it to be in the clutch like that. You know, I was numb. I hit the shot, and I couldn't believe I hit it for a second. You know, I had confidence that it was going in, but obviously once you hit a shot like that, you kind of just lose it. And, you know, I was celebrating with the guys, and, you know, it's just it's an unreal feeling.
When you were a kid practicing the buzzer beater, were you Dante Ingram? Were you Michael Jordan? Were you Derrick Rose? Like, who were you?
I think I had to say Michael Jordan. Obviously, he's had multiple game winners, and you see those things as a kid, and that's what you try to put yourself in the position to be, and, you know, try to imagine yourself being hitting the clutch shot like that. But, yeah, I mean, you know, as a kid, like I said, this is the moment that you dream of, so to be in this position, you know, I'm very proud and happy.
Walker must hit the front end. A freshman, 75% at the line this season. First free throws today. One timeout, they don't take it. Magic as the Ramblers from Loyola Chicago moving on to the second round.
Mully and Hanley, and we're delighted to welcome in Porter Moser, the Loyola head coach, a great friend of the program, and just a magnificent architect of victory. Good morning, Porter. How are you?
Good morning, boys. I'm doing good.
Just an amazing thing to watch yesterday. You know, what was your takeaway? Just the senior leadership, the fact that your guys met that moment.
You know what? How apropos that Loyola Chicago hits a game winner by a homegrown Chicago kid, Dante Ingram from Simeon. How perfect storybook script for him, and just really happy for him. And, you know, happy for our guys. You know, just they believe. I mean, it's amazing with any walk of life, any company, anything, when you got a group of people that believe, that work together, that are unselfish, and that's what this group is. They're high character guys. But it was surreal just to see the atmosphere. I can't tell you how amazing the following of Loyola was there. It was bigger than any of the teams that were there at the regional. And that is so cool because, you know, Molly, you've been there when we've had games at Gentile when you could tee up a golf ball during one of our games, hit it in the stands, and it start ricocheting around and not hit anybody. So to see what's going on and to see the videos of all over campus, the student union, different bars just go ballistic. It's just so fun to see where this grassroots rebuild started from, to see how excited people are.
So what did you do after the game? We know what happened during the game, the decision not to call the timeout, the poise that your team displayed under the late game pressure. But you have to get your team back down to earth to continue to play in this tournament. So take me through everything that transpired after the game and how you're going to get ready for Tennessee.
You can't imagine the following right now. It's like a reality show. I'm not joking. I mean, CBS has been following us with a camera everywhere we go. I got to really just take time to walk into the restroom. I mean, there's everywhere you go. It was just the biggest media circus you can imagine afterwards. And then we brought our guys in and we closed the door and, you know, we said a prayer. And one of the things I've said during this whole run is I love our guys. They're mature. They're locked in. Is I want them to enjoy this journey. I'm not this, you know, drill sergeant that won't let them enjoy it, because I can do that because every film session, every practice, they're locked in. They're mature enough to do it. And so, like we said it going in, and people ask me, like, how are you handling all the circus with everything? I'm like, I'm letting them enjoy it. But they know we have this laser-like focus once it's time to do business, once it's time to do film. And they've embraced that. And the guys, like, we get back to the hotel, and it's at the Hyatt here in Dallas. It was crazy. And, you know, we had a meal catered in. We talked to them. We let them rest a little bit. We brought them back, talked to them a little bit more, and got them in bed. We got a bunch of things planned today. But, you know, it's put that in the bank. Next one. Now we go on to Tennessee. These guys didn't want to just come here and be happy that we were in the dance. They wanted how they practice. They wanted to come in here and compete and win and show people that we are good.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Thank you, Mark Grody, and thank you to Lawrence Holmes and Mullion Hanley. Good stuff with the key players in the Loyola first-round upset. Love that question right off the bat, too, from Lawrence. Everyone had that. Everyone had that athlete, whether it was you were practicing the walk-off and you were Ken Griffey Jr., mm-hmm. or for me in the driveway, if I was shooting the three, I was John Paxson or Steve Kerr, because I was hitting game winners for the Bulls in the championship era. But if I love to pretend like I was Jordan with the back to the basket, the turnaround fadeaway shot. That was my favorite.
You have the follow through. Do you have the fingers that dangle down in perfect form, like Shep's picture at Cole City that he put on the old internet yesterday?
The old internet. Bryce Drew is my dude. How many times I practiced that shot?
Oh wow!
The full court toss and then the turn, and
you've probably never heard
shot.
Of Pete Maravich. I know Shep has. Danny, have you heard of Pete Maravich?
I've heard of Pete Maravich. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Pistol Pete?
He hasn't played in many years.
I mean, I never saw him play.
Taken a breath in many years.
That's true also. Yeah. But don't bring up sad things about Pistol Pete. That was my guy. Number 44, Pete Maravich. Number 44,
I could see you dribbling around real quick, just like a Pete Maravich.
I didn't think you.
So a young Danny McNeil was a big basketball fan?
I liked basketball, yeah. Because,
nice.
You know, I was one of the tallest kids in my class in sixth grade, and I never grew an inch. When I got to middle school, I never got taller.
You peaked in sixth grade.
I peaked in sixth grade, that's right.
That can happen. My neighbor was very attractive. She peaked in about seventh grade as well. I was like, that was like my social currency. They were like, "You live next to Carolyn?" I was like, "Yeah, I do. It's incredible.
Very cool."
Yeah. Oh, coolest thing about me in grade school. I know it's hard to imagine that I didn't have that much else that was very cool. I wasn't the most popular kid growing up. Great at video games, great at poker, that sort of thing. Yeah, you know, the dorky, skinny kid.
Smart ass.
Try to be the class clown, tell the jokes, that sort of thing.
You know the best way to become the class clown? Study the current class clown and learn from him.
Sure, of course. Never sit in the front of the room, sit in the back.
That's a movie line.
Never mind.
Hey, the sexiest man in America is playing good golf again today. Patrick Reed is making another run. He just bogeyed a few holes ago, but he's 3 under for the day and 6 under for the tournament. I am really looking forward to his new rivalry with his hero, Tiger Woods. Why are you giggling as such?
Peoria Mad texted in, "Hey, Danny, have you heard of Wilt Chamberlain?"
Well, let's not liken Pete Maravich to Wilt Chamberlain.
Why not? They're on the...
That's not the same.
I mean...
I thought there was a puncher's chance.
But like
I thought
Maravich,
there was...
Pete
Jerry West.
Like Shep says, Maravich has been dead for 30 years. I've been dead for a long damn time.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So I thought there was a chance he might have slipped through your sports crack.
I understand. Thank you for thinking about the crack. So what golf thing were you saying to me? I'm sorry. I'm listening to you, I promise.
Talking about the fleshy-faced Patrick Reed playing good golf today.
Oh, yeah, Tiger Woods, the red shirt. He's, he's Fat Tiger. Shep just handed me something about your Purdue Boilermakers, by the way. Isaac Haas is going to miss the remainder of the NCAA tournament. Their senior center, one of the big guys that they rely on, fractured elbow in
Boiler
that blowout.
Down.
Yeah, he fell on his elbow midway through the second half, battling for a rebound. He stayed in for the rest of the game. X-rays revealed after the contest a fracture in his elbow. He averaged 14.7 points and 5.7 rebounds per game, finished with 9 points and 10 boards in their win today.
Good touch for a big guy. They're obviously not a very good chance right now to get to the Final Four. I don't even know if they get out of the second round.
Yeah, I bought them in my auction. Them, North Carolina, and Duke were my three big investments in our NCAA tournament
that
auction.
That just sucks because Purdue hasn't had a really good chance to get to a Final Four in so many years. I mean, going back to the Glenn Robinson
it's an injury. The Robbie Hummel teams, Robbie Hummel tears his ACL, throws out whatever he did to his back injury. Those teams were loaded, but they were never healthy by the time March came around.
Is he their best player? Is he consensus their best player?
I mean, he's just as important as anyone.
Yeah.
I don't know about best.
Yeah.
Like, that team's not getting out of a reach. I'm with Mac. Butler or
Well, Boilermaker fans, yeah, you can sit around over the weekend and watch your DVDs of the 1980 team that got to the Final Four with Joe Barry Carroll.
That's made its way to the DVD, the Gene Cady era teams. Doug Gottlieb said that if they got to Villanova, that he thought that Purdue matched up really well. He didn't think they matched up great with some of their early round matchups, but he thought if they could get to the Elite Eight against Villanova, that they would have won. But I guess not anymore.
Boiler down. That sucks. The president of the Purdue Club of Chicago was here earlier today, guy I have a friendship with, and he was all excited about his Boilermakers, but now he can look forward to the football program and continue as it tries to continue to go in the right direction.
We've got Teddy Greenstein at 4 o'clock, and coming up next, a former Bear has signed with a new place, and he had an all-time line when he met the new media. I want to run it by you coming up. It's McNeil and Parkins on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Every year we sit down with the staff, we evaluate our entire roster. Every player is carefully analyzed. And as we went through it, we just had a decision to make if we were going to exercise the option in this contract, and we decided against that.
Bears general manager Ryan Pace discussing the decision not to pick up the option on Josh Sitton's contract, making the former Bears guard after 2 years a free agent, and he has moved on. It's McNeil and Parkins live at Real Time Sports in Elk Grove Village. We will talk to Teddy Greenstein in 15 minutes, both about Tiger Woods and his golf comeback and a feature piece he has on new Cubs pitcher Yu Darvish. That coming up at the top of the 4 o'clock hour. Josh Sitton was asked about, hey, right guard, left guard, switching from side to side. And he said Dolphins, correct? Is that right?
He was in Miami on Wednesday. I don't know if he actually signed with the Dolphins.
Yeah, I believe he is. He has signed with the Miami Dolphins. And so Josh Sitton just said playing right guard instead of his familiar left guard is like, quote, trying to wipe your ass with the other hand. I'm going to miss that quote around this town. And I would think, you know what? Now that he mentions it, I never would have thought of that as being a very complicated thing to do.
Oh, you'd never been forced to cheat?
No. Well, see, I'm better at basically everything in the world right-handed. But the one thing that I'm better at left-handed is a little X-rated for the radio.
As opposed to where Josh Sitton took us.
Oh, now, I'm just saying, I mean, I can talk about the Josh Sitton
that
thing.
That can be a very difficult thing for people who don't have much hand dexterity. I don't have great hand dexterity with my right hand. I've lost use of my left arm a few times.
Really?
Broken bones, things like that, fractured wrist. Yeah, I've had a few. So it's difficult, but you manage.
So you're an ambi wiper?
Yes, I would prefer to remain a southpaw when possible, but if I have to go to the bullpen and bring on the power, the fireballing right-hander, I can do that.
I can honestly, I broke my left arm as a kid. I was like 8 years old, I'm a righty wiper, so I don't think I've ever once been in a situation where I've had to go to the lefty.
Well, you'll probably get there at some point.
I hope to, Mac. I hope to.
You know what? Just if you get bored this weekend, give it a shot and just let us know how it goes.
I can report back to that for you. I'm just saying this is an incredible thing. I never thought about that. All the other things, teach your kid how to throw left-handed, make the major leagues, all of the advantages of being left-handed. I never once considered being an ambi wiper.
See, I didn't think switching from side to side for a guard would be that big of a deal. I'm surprised he's expressing issues with this, that this was a problem being flipped side to side.
Well, I assume that's what he's implying by it's like trying to wipe your ass with the other hand.
Yeah,
I'm assuming he's saying it would be difficult to go from right guard to left guard.
I don't know why a guy who has been to a Pro Bowl and has been in the NFL for 7 or 8 years would have that big of an issue with it.
It's all about the footwork. Jeff Schwartz, who does some film study work for The Athletic, used to be on the Chiefs as a buddy of mine because he's one of the few Jewish NFL players of all time, so we bonded over his time in Kansas City.
Sure.
Over a latke or two and some Manischewitz.
Mazel.
Yeah, and he said that, it's backwards. Just everything, your slide step and which foot you go back with and the hip turn and all that. He said it's actually very challenging because he was a guard who was often a backup player, so sometimes he'd have to be the filling guard of the left side and the right side. He said it was very challenging.
Okay. We used to I don't want to do too many Uncle Rico stories in one day since we've already covered my long snapping career being born here.
Oh, please.
But in my high school's football program when I was there, our strong side of the line, the guard and tackle who lined up next to the tight end, we always would flip. The guard and tackle would flip to whichever side we were running the strength to. If we wanted to run our tight end on the right side, we were running sweep on the right side, and there was a, because that's where we were positioned on the field to have a better chance of succeeding. Wide side of the field, we'd line up in strong right. If we were to go to strong left, it doesn't make much sense on a shorter field to run sweep. We still might run trap, but we had no problem flipping from one side to the next. There might be one you might feel a smidge more comfortable with, but you got to work at it.
You got to
get better at it.
You got to teach Josh Sitton from your high school football
days. Yeah,
that's
what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, I mean, the Bears choose to move on from him, and I think everybody then connects the dots and say it's going to be Quentin Nelson. It's going to be the guard, right? If Cody Whitehair is going to be the center and Kyle Long is back and we know it's Massey and Long or Leno, excuse me for now, as your tackles, it feels like there's that one spot on the interior of the offensive line that it can be.
I saw a mock last night that has your Notre Dame guard coming to the Bears.
Quentin Nelson.
Yeah, he better be really damn good if they pick him at 8.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm with you. I think everybody agrees with that logic. It's just, think about what Ryan Pace has done this offseason and where he's allocated all of the resources. Everything has been about Trubisky. I mean, yeah, he got Lynch the one-year deal from San Francisco as a pass rusher, former fifth-round pick. That's a depth signing. They're still going to have to invest in the draft at pass rush at some point. But it feels like he's doing everything he possibly can, which I like, to make it comfortable for Mitch Trubisky. So maybe that'll stay true with the 8th overall pick
in
the draft.
If he takes a guard, he's continuing on the everything's for Mitch theme. There's no doubt about it. That's what that would be for also. As well as the running game, but primarily as a pass protector. Look, pass rusher and cornerback, I'm not backing off. I'm not going to bitch and moan if they take an offensive lineman at 8. Their offensive line, for my money, isn't really good right now. So I have no problem with that. I would rather see them get a difference-making pass rusher. And I fell in love with Denzel Ward when I watched him in the Big Ten title game.
Yeah. If they took Nelson and they went Leno, Nelson, Whitehair from left tackle, left guard, center, in theory, the argument that Ryan Pace could sell you the night of his draft press conference would be, we've solidified the middle to blind side for our rookie quarterback for the next, you know, in the case of Whitehair and Nelson, in theory, the next decade, in Leno for at least the length of his rookie contract.
I got a really good feeling whatever Pace does on draft night, people are going to hate it.
Really?
It seems
he's got a lot of good vibes right now.
He does right now, but it's been his early history, and it's been the Bears' history in recent memory, to be more willing to draft athletes and projects than legitimate, well-decorated college football stud bolts.
That's like the kid from Virginia Tech then.
Yes.
The super athlete linebacker. They think that maybe he could be shifted into a 3-4 outside pass rusher, but he doesn't really do that in college.
Well, a lot of people
20
felt
years
that,
old.
You know, Leonard Floyd was a bit of a tweener. They weren't sure what he was at the professional level. I'm still not sure we know. And backing up just a second, Denzel Ward is a cornerback. From Ohio State. I was mentioning a pass rusher. He's not the pass rusher. He's a corner, one of those two positions. And you talked about the kid from Alabama, Fitzpatrick, yesterday.
Yeah.
Most people think he's going to play safety.
Right. But I think also they think he could be a hybrid player. He could be like a roving player. Just play him in nickel, play him in dime, play him in all over the field in the secondary, and he'll just have the ability to be versatile. But, yes, it does seem like it's more of a free safety for him than a straight-up starting cornerback.
I want to commit a guy to a position.
Yeah.
I don't want a guy who's specializing right out of the gate as a rover.
Yeah.
If you're drafting a guy 8 to play cornerback or safety, if you're going to go in that direction. So, because someone's going to draft Minka Fitzpatrick high, too.
Yep.
Probably higher than Denzel Ward. Most people have him graded higher. I want to be messing around with this guy, doing a little of this, a little of that. Teach him the damn position in year one. Teach him one position.
Well, it feels then it's more likely that it's a corner than Fitzpatrick for the Bears, right? Because Adrian Amos and Eddie Jackson feel like that's the Bears' safety tandem for right now.
Eddie Jackson provided me last football season with one of my... Because while we all gave the Bears credit for being better defensively, they weren't exactly highlight better very often. They didn't get a lot of takeaways, especially early. September was the only team worse than the Bears in takeaways in September was Cleveland. The Bears were sitting there going into October 31st in the NFL in turnover margin.
And it still felt like progress from the year before when they only had the 11.
When Eddie Jackson punched the ball away from A.J. Green in Cincinnati, I think that was in mid-November. We were getting late in the season, and they were finally starting to get turnovers, but they weren't getting takeaways. They weren't creating turnovers. They were falling on fumbles that just happened to, oops, maybe they created a few, but that was the forced fumble that was the highlight of my season, when he punched the ball away from A.J. Green's and right at the boundary with almost no room to spare, falls on the football, and the Bears take the field offensively. That was a terrific play by Eddie Jackson.
He had four takeaways, I think, by himself last year.
Two forced fumbles and two picks, I think.
Yeah, so I mean, that, and for a team that had struggled so much with takeaways the two previous seasons, it's like, all right, we might have a guy who can be in that line of great Bears safeties, but obviously after a rookie year, got to give him more time for that. This segment, by the way, was sponsored by CeCe's New Crust, New Sauce, New York Style Pizza. Now at CeCe's, grab an extra large slice
CeCe's
of their new meatball pepperoni pizza and new cheesecake brownies for dessert. There's so much to love on the buffet for just five and change, only at CeCe's. Prices vary, restrictions apply. We have Teddy Greenstein, who has a profile piece on Yu Darvish coming out, and of course, he's covered and followed golf for a long time. The comeback of Tiger Woods. Is this one different, or is it going to be short-lived? Teddy Greenstein joins us next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.